in the sanctuary of an old historic Universalist church in Boston in the 60s, a place called the Charles Street Meeting House. The congregation tore out all the pews, rearranged them in a circle, and hung two images on either side of their worship space. Everything they did in the life of their congregation took place between these two symbols. It was a statement that everything they were, everything the congregation did and said and hoped for, all the busyness that they were going about doing, took place between these two icons, these two aspects of the identity of a striving, hopeful people. Those two symbols on either side of the central circular worship space at the Charles Street Meeting House were an image of an atom and a picture of the Milky Way. From the tiniest building block to the galaxy of almost unimaginable immensity in which we live and move and have our somewhat precarious being. Between those two things, the minuscule and the magisterial, we do what we do as a congregation and as a people. Almost infinitely tiny in the grand scheme of things, we stand staring up at the stars and dare to imagine that in spite of it all, in spite of our smallness and the vastness of the sky, in spite of the space between the stars, what we do in church is important, and what we are capable of as individuals still matters, even when the problems we face are as vast as the distance between the galaxies themselves. Because though we are small, and though we are almost nothing compared to the vastness of everything, the members of that church in 1961 believed that we human beings are everything to one another, and that if God exists, she does not work independently from the labor of our own hands. Everything we do, these symbols said, dances between our smallness and the vastness of the infinite, and yet everything we do matters, because we flawed and finite and amazing human creatures are the only ones capable of choosing to bless the world. To hang there in the space between our smallness and the vastness is a reminder of the common human condition that transcends all religious and ideological boundaries. And that was why that Universalist congregation 50 years ago existed. That was why they worshipped. Because in spite of the space between the stars, in spite of the distance or absence of a miracle-working God, and in spite of all they could not control, they were committed to doing holy work together. That's why they existed. Until, of course, that particular congregation succumbed to the inevitability of change and something new was born out of their beginnings. A month ago, I actually had a delightful cup of coffee and a Danish in the pastry shop that now occupies the space where that church once worshipped. The congregation faded away a long time ago, but they did become something new. Namely, they became us, and their mission, one might say, became ours. You see, right around the time that the people in that Universalist church were gathering to dance their dances and chant and sing their songs between the atom and the Milky Way, talks were underway between their denomination, the Universalists, and another, the Unitarians, about the possibility of merging to create what we know of as the Unitarian Universalist Association, that extraordinarily long and cumbersome moniker that we go by today. For those of you who puzzle at our long name, it is entirely justified to do so. And it's important to know that those two movements, Unitarian and Universalism, they came together in 1961, and that movement rapidly came to claim for itself a special identity among liberal religious traditions in America. UUism, as we know it, has thrived for most of the last 50 years on being the one place where the rationalists could go and feel safe, and the radicals could go and have just enough ideological and theological leeway to make the religious orthodoxies of their day raise an eyebrow or two. In June of this year, our association will celebrate its 50th birthday. It has been 50 years since that historic merger. And for 50 years, our tradition has been a humanistic response to religious conservatism and a sometimes fearless, usually left-leaning voice for social change that spoke when other communities could not, on issues as wide-ranging as nuclear disarmament, integration, gay and lesbian rights, global warming, and the ERA. And now some folks say that liberal religion is once again becoming a new thing. And as it has ever been, change is in the air amongst us. We are becoming for the next 50 years something both like and unlike what we have been in the past. Historically, we have been an optimistic people. We have believed that we can build heaven on earth. We have espoused the triumph of the human spirit. And yet, no matter what the future brings, we are also a people who cannot avoid the inevitability of suffering and tragedy, and our optimism, our wonder at the illimitable stars and the power of the human spirit must come face to face with our smallness, just as it did for those worshippers 50 years ago hanging between an atom and the infinite. We are increasingly a home for the searchers, for the literally and metaphorically lonely. We are a spiritual refugee camp for those who have been wounded by small definitions of complex words. We are a place to go to find not just a prattling series of self-serving questions, but a few answers that might make life more meaningful. We are some hope becoming a new thing that is not based on our forthright and sometimes self-satisfied denial of orthodoxy, but on our freely chosen acceptance of a different kind of faith, one which does not simply state that God is dead, but states instead that we are alive, and that if God has work, it is our work, and God's family is our family, and His love is our love. We are becoming a new thing. But the thing about new things is that most of the time, a new thing ain't that new at all. It's just a reframing of the old thing. And if we have any power over its formation, our new thing might be a reframing of the old that carries forward what is best about all that was, even while marching steadfastly into what will be. I was educated and mentored by leaders whom I consider to be among the bright lights of previous generations. In my case, men mostly, who preached and lived and taught in the first years of that merged Unitarian Universalism. Those preachers and ministers taught me that what we do is worshipful and deep and important and spiritual, even and especially when the change we so earnestly hope for is not the provenance of a distant deity, but dependent entirely on the work of our hands. The ones who taught me danced between the atom and the Milky Way. They said that though we are small and God is sometimes far, far away, we are powerful and responsible and interdependent nonetheless, no matter what heartbreak life may bring. I remember one of my mentors preaching a sermon about the tragic and life-affirming events of her day, the events that she and her congregation were called to parse out with the people in the pews. The events of her many years of ministry include civil rights, the Vietnam War, in time the AIDS epidemic, and as she neared retirement, the horror of 9/11. She looked at a group of us, eager young ministers, every one, and she asked rhetorically but not quite, "I wonder what your generation will have to face together." And she hoped that we might have the capacity to face it with wisdom instead of fear. We don't know what this generation will bring us. We don't even know what the decade has in store, but we do know that we already face down the reality of young men with guns. and pundits with angry words, and political divides so sharply drawn as to pull us all towards the razor's edge that cleanly cuts away enemy from friend and leaves us so painfully divided, we sometimes do not know how to start building up our connections again. I do not know what will face us as we worship together for another 50 years. I do not know what this thing we are becoming will be, but I do know that our forebears faced down young men with guns too, and that this faith has offered up hope in times such as these and times worse than these. Whatever we are becoming, it is part and parcel of what we've been, and this new thing, this emerging Unitarian Universalism for the next 50 years, in some beautiful ways, is much like that which gave it rise. It strikes me that along with like-minded persons of other faiths, we are the voice for what liberal religion can be. We are the ones who will decide what religion that values connection over division can become. It would perhaps be easier to think that other people are supposed to imagine a future, that other people are supposed to pave the way for those who follow, but there is nobody to dare to speak the truth that religion can unite us instead of divide, except for us. We are the voice for the future of this freely chosen faith, and in these divided times, our faith has never been more important. I don't know how much of the violence in Tucson came about because of strict partisan and political divides in our culture. We don't know and we can't diagnose the causes of such pain and violence, but we do know that it is at least worthwhile to have a place like this where difference is supposed to be a good thing and clear party lines are supposed to be broken down instead of built up. We do know that our values offer a sharp critique of a society in which the good guys are so clearly differentiated from the bad guys, where politics may be enough to raise the barrel of a gun, where the theological and ideological divides are so great that people fail to see that they all stand here together, suspended between their smallness and the vastness of the infinite, responsible always for one another. As a congregation, we do everything we can to ensure that at least here, at least in this place, we're not divided into groups, standing across from one another, staring over the divide and duking it out for victory. Instead, in this place, representing many generations and theological differences, we are making a way forward together and trying to model to the world outside the church's doors what might happen if people of honest difference have an honest debate instead of an impetus for violence and fear. What is this new thing that liberal religion is becoming? And what does it have in common with all the things we have always been? The litany of what we have always been might include persons committed to responsibility, to mutual care, to commitment to one another, and to bettering our tiny little corners of the world in spite of it all. David Bumbaugh, one of my mentors and a man who represents the generation of ministers and preachers before me, wrote words we have already heard once this morning to remind us about what's vital, about what we do in community together. He said, "In this world, we busily guard ourselves from the full implication of love, from all the people under the sun, regardless of time and death and the space between the stars, who are one kin, flesh of our flesh, bone of our bone, bound together in an inescapable unity, destined to the same end, bound together in a mystic oneness. We guard ourselves against the radical truth that it is our separateness which is the only illusion." It is not any certain theological perspective that is the great illusion. It is not the propagation of a particular political viewpoint that is the great illusion. It is our separateness that is the great illusion. This has always been so. It is so for humanists who would rather never hear the word God, and it is so for those mystics who cannot help but shout that word from the rooftops. It is so for libertarian separatists in mountain enclaves and progressive academics in their ivory towers. The only illusion is that we are not in this together. The great illusion that our congregations exist to dispel is the same illusion that our congregations have been gathering to dispel for 50 years and more. The illusion of human separateness. The idea that anybody but us will shield the weary ones from the storm. It is not any particular theological or political belief that is the most dangerous concept. Rather, it is the idea that we are anything less than one another's people. No matter what. Regardless of time and death and the space between the stars, regardless of political identity or theological perspective, regardless of religion or nationality or creed, we human beings are one another's keepers. Whether you believe that God loves you or not, whether you pray or not, whether you are 30 or 95, Republican or Democrat, our faith teaches that we are deeply interconnected and deeply responsible for one another, and that if the world is to be a more peaceful place, we must make it so. For 50 years, for 100 years, for thousands of years stretching off into the beginnings of the human religious imagination, we have looked up into the night sky and marveled at the immensity of it all. At our seeming smallness and the vastness of all that meets our gaze. In spite of that smallness, in spite of the vastness, in spite of all that we cannot control and cannot fix and do not know, some human beings have had faith that what we can do is worthwhile, and that working towards such things is better when you do it with other people. We exist now for many of the same reasons our forebears existed. Because every person is precious cargo. And even in our smallness, even in the face of vastness, we are called to recognize that truth for one another. We exist as a congregation because if we're not willing to shelter one another from the storm, if we're not willing to lift one another up when God's absence feels too great, the storm won't ever end. If we are one another's people, we are called to be shelter to one another, even when our smallness seems like it may overcome us, even when our differences seem so great. We are becoming something new. Liberal religion in a time of deep division. We are becoming something new. I do not doubt it. I hope this new thing we are becoming is a rather gentler thing than we have been in the past. Not angry at God, but instead willing to take on the burdens of a world in which God does not work magic. Not eager to dispel myths and rant about all we do not believe, but willing to tell new and life-affirming stories. Not lobbing our competing truth claims over chasms, but meeting together as we do today, to decide how we best can transform this old world into something more whole for more people everywhere. The next 50 years are ours, yours. We do not know what tragedy, what beauty they will bring to us, but they are ours to meet together. And in spite of time and death and tragedy and the space between the stars, we are one another's people.